Foreplay. With Pierce McCarthy. Let's talk about the four songs that you wrote that are most personal to you. Foreplay.
Hey there, folks, and you're very welcome to episode 14 of Foreplay. My guest this week begun her journey recording a song in a friend's garage and put it out on the World Wide Web to see how it would be taken. And to say it turned out to be the most solid of foundations in the music industry would be an understatement. She's on the verge of breaking it as a global superstar and has one of those voices that once you hear it, you just crave more. So our virtual journey this week takes us to beautiful Brighton by the Sea, where I'm delighted to be joined by the very talented Lyra. Hey there, Lyra. How are you doing? And you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you keeping?
I'm absolutely grand. Thanks a million for having me. I've been really looking forward to having a chin wag with you.
Yeah, same here, same here. How has the last year been for you with all the madness that's going on in the world?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weird roller coaster. Like, you know, coming off stage just after starting my very first like headline tour in Ireland that was sold out, from that to like literally goodbye, don't see anyone, locked up. Signed, sealed, delivered, goodbye. So it's been a bit of a weird one. I found it really, really hard at the start because it was my first year that I was really ready to like give it socks. I was like booked on, I think there's like 34 shows or something like that, like the most I would have ever done. It was really hard at the start for me, but I've kind of got my mojo back. I'm writing at home. I'm getting the album together over Zooms and doing as much as I can and not being too hard on myself. So you know what? I'm alive. I'm happy out.
Yeah, that's the main thing. And you've actually, I mean, you have been ridiculously busy because nearly every time I turn on the TV or something, it's you.
I know, yeah. Even some of the presenters in RT were like, girl, you're on RT more than us these days. I don't know how this has happened. I don't know. But yeah, I have. I've been very fortunate. I'm very lucky.
And you did as well. I know we're past the festive season now, but you brought out a beautiful Christmas EP as well.
I did. You know what? Actually, I was very quiet coming up to Christmas. And I just sat at home one day and I was like, the magic of Christmas, my original song on it is just about like Christmas decorations who are in love, but they only come alive at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And I just decided I'd write a little song about it. And I sent it to my manager after an hour and I was like, what do you think of this song? She's like, that's a really good song. I was like, I'm going to do a Christmas EP. And she was like, you know, in order to have like a Christmas EP out there, it has to be done within like 2 weeks ASAP. You need to get going. So I literally just produced the thing myself and got it out there as fast as I could. I said, why not? Like, this is the time where I can try different things. So why not try a bit of producing? So yeah, it is.
And I mean, it did well on Spotify as well. I mean, like, you had your own original song and then there was three covers, but they were really cool versions of the covers that you did.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I love doing a bit of a cover, challenging myself, taking someone else's song and kind of like singing it how I would sing it. So, And they're my favorite Christmas songs anyway. So I was just like, I might as well whack them on.
Yeah, because I guess it's kind of nice, you know, when you're tackling a Christmas classic like that, you kind of want to stay to the format, but put your own kind of twist on it. And I think you've done that very well, too.
Yeah, I love doing things like that. Like, you know, I kind of like let my guard down and went a bit wild when I done the U2 cover of Mothers of the Disappeared. And I actually was really nervous sending it off for approval. I was like, what if I get in trouble? Because like there's bits in there that aren't in the song. Like they're not the bit, we can hear it, we hear it, the heartbeat. It's not in the original song. There's me adding bits in and melodies in and everything. I was like, I could get bloody killed here. But it got passed and I was delighted. So it's great fun just to change it up a bit.
Did Bono give his seal of approval to it, you know?
I wish. I'd say he's like, Lyra, bloody you.
They have a fierce affinity for Cork, though, because in the very early days when they started what used to be the Arc Dance Ballroom Club down by the train station, it's now just a bunch of apartments, but they played some of their very first gigs in there to like 9 people.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. And there was a good buddy of mine. He now lives in the States. We were in school together and his uncle was one of the 9 people and he kind of liked them, so he started going to them. And as a result, fast forward years later, every time U2 were releasing an album, he got a version of it before it came into the shops. And when they came down to play in Cork, then he got backstage passes. So they remembered the people from the very beginning.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's wicked. Yeah. I mean, the first time that I was playing, I was meaning like supporting people like Dermot Kennedy. So like they weren't there for me and I wouldn't be able to remember because there were so many, bloody many of them there for him. I was like, hi guys, I'm just going to sing a few songs before he comes.
Was that nervy? You know, you're playing someone else's gig, essentially.
Yeah, it was. It was scary. Like I was delighted, obviously, that it was Dermot with us both being Irish and, you know, our kind of musical tastes aren't like massively worlds apart. Mm. So like that kind of helped me a bit. But you always go on thinking these people are not here to see me. Like they don't have a clue who I am. They've probably just seen my name on a poster. So you kind of extra have to try and sing your guts out to like win them over as much as you can. And it's scary. The first time I actually done it with Dermot was up in Glasgow and I came off stage and I literally started getting sick everywhere. Everywhere. My drummer was like holding open a black bag and I was just like getting sick. It was like that nerve-wracking.
Wow.
I was like, I can't believe we've just done that. But as I said, Dermot was like a good intro to it, whereas I also done one with Jess Glynn in Belfast, which was like an amazing show. But like Jess Glynn's music and my music are worlds apart. Like she's dance queen, pop queen, like bangers, bangers after bangers. And mine is a bit more like kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I don't even know how to describe it. A bit more, I suppose, Florence and the Machine meets kind of Kate Bush vibe that her fans would be like, I don't listen to Kate Bush. And I'm like, yeah, here's me coming out wailing away to them. That one was a bit more scarier.
Mind you, though, Kate Bush, it's funny that you cite her as an influence because she's my favourite female artist of all time. And now my second female act that I love the most are the Staves.
Oh, I love the Staves too.
I just think vocal.
That's her song, Mexico.
Oh, such a beautiful song. That's the song I was introduced to with the Staves. So
that was a good intro.
Yeah, and they have a new album out now and everything, so the girls are sounding fab. And I saw them when they played in the Everyman a couple of years ago as well, and they're just, what a live experience.
Yeah, beautiful voices, so beautiful.
Indeed. Now, Lyra, I invited you onto the podcast to talk about the four songs that you've written that are most personal to you. And the first song that you chose was Emerald. Now, why did you choose this song?
Well, this was the first song that I wrote, like that I really decided I wanted to be an artist and I wanted to kind of take it seriously. And this was the first song that I ever wrote.
Okay.
I wrote it especially for my nan at the time because, you know, being from Ireland and being around a lot of great musicians, like we've so many amazing singers in Ireland and musicians and everything, I suppose, and coming from a family where everyone bar my dad has a good voice. So my nan was kind of worried about me. She was like, when are you going to get a proper job now? And, you know, just always really worried. Like I'd be the one that when I go up to her house, like she'd be like, go down underneath the mattress now and take a few quid out for yourself and stuff like that. So I was kind of, I took that time to be like, right, I'm going to write a song. I'm going to write it about my nan. Bear in mind, like every day after school, we'd go to our nan's house. Like she reared us every day of the week. We were up there without a shadow of a doubt. We were there. So I just wanted to write this song for her, about her, to show her like how much she inspired me growing up. Like she made me such a strong woman because like she reared like, I don't know, it was 7, 8 children and she is hard as nails. So I kind of like wanted to put all that together in a song and then show her what I was doing. I wasn't just a singer. I was actually writing these songs myself that she was hearing. So I just kind of like sat down one day and just wrote about her. And I remember the middle eight bit, I was like on a train and I hadn't had a middle eight for ages. And it just came to me and I was like, your emerald heart. And the song just came together. And when I got it produced by one of my friends who had just like a random studio in his garage, I put it up on SoundCloud to see what people would think of it. And it just went a bit nuts. I was getting called in by loads of major record labels.
Wow.
And it kind of really started my career.
How was that when you record this song, you write it about one of the most special people in your life?
Yeah.
You put it up on SoundCloud, probably thinking, Ira, maybe some people will listen to it.
Yeah.
And then you've got major labels ringing you.
Yeah,
what was that experience like?
Because like I only put it up just to test the water, like to see, you know, if people liked it or if people didn't, kind of thing. Like I wasn't expecting anything from it. So when they started getting in contact, I was like, jeepy Mac, what in the name of Nora do I do? Like I'd no manager. I'd nobody. I literally had myself and my friend who had a studio in a garage. Like I recorded the whole thing in pitch black because we couldn't even get the fucking lights on. So like, this is my life. Like, this was my life. So I was like, what is going on here? So I didn't really know what to do. So I took some of the meetings at the start and I was like, well, I'll just go myself and sure, as they say, fake it till you make it and just see how we get on. And I just felt like it just wasn't the right time for me then to sign this deal. They were like trying to do things like make me sing with an English accent and stuff like that. And stuff like this is going ahead. And anyway, after all that, my nan unfortunately got really sick and I decided that it wasn't the time for me to be staying in England and to be doing this, starting my career. So I took a year out and I moved home and me and my sister moved into her house and cared for her until she passed away. And that was kind of like that. But, you know, after a few months, when I was able to come back to the UK, that song still got me to where I am today. Like, wow. That was the only song that I had. So then I just reintroduced it and it went even more crazy. And then Guinness picked it up for one of their ads and Striking Out had it in their drama. And it just, I don't know, that song just seems to have stuck with me my entire life. And I think it's because it's written about such a special person at such a special time. Mm-hmm. And it's just all worked for me from that song on.
Okay, well, we have a listen to your first song, so.
But,
okay, this is Lyra and Emerald.
We sit in silence, her old hand in my hand. My mind never felt so full. Her wisdom always fills the air.
Found joy in her. The steps sound in peace.
is that song, when you perform it now, does it take on an even more special feeling for you?
It definitely does, because obviously, like, when I wrote the song, it was like for my nan to show her what I was doing, and kind of like she was there with me. Mm. And now when I sing it with her not being there, and what, you know, we went through during losing her and how strong she was, like, she showed her strength to me even more than she could ever imagine. Mm. That, you know, that time that she was passing, that now when I sing this song and I'm just like, I will run with the wolves now they know our name, and like, you know, I kneel and pray for us, the sky will be ours. It's just really empowering. It's like I'm doing it for her, and it really just brings so much power and passion to me. Like when I sing that song, my veins are popping out of my neck. I'm like the Hulk. There's just so much emotion that I just want to get out to kind of express how much she meant to me.
Yeah.
From that song.
Yeah, I love the lyric actually, and you just mentioned it there. I kneel and pray for us that the sky will be ours. I just think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
And even in the very, very first verse, some days we sit in silence, her old hand in mine. My mind has never felt so full. Her wisdom always fills the air. Grandparents have that kind of wisdom about them, don't they?
Yeah, like they've lived their lives. They've been through it all before we ever have. And, you know, whenever I used to go through things or like had altercations at school or like with my mom and dad, she'd be the one I'd go to because she would have been there, done that. And obviously she was the wise woman in my world. So I would go to her all the time and sit in her house for hours and hours and hours. And she would just tell me exactly what to do. And she was always right.
Yeah, actually, I kind of had that experience at Christmas time because both my parents are still alive. My dad's 81 and my mother is 77. And I have a grandson. So they're now great grandparents. And when we were down at Christmas time and my daughter was just talking to my mother about how tough lockdown is and, you know, having a small child and all this. And my mother went on this conversation with her for about 15 minutes. And we all just sat there and listened. And it was literally like wisdom just coming out everywhere. And you knew that she was right, because here's this woman who, she's 77, she's got so many more years life experience than us. And I think it's only when you get older that you appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. I always go to my mom and dad for bloody everything anyway.
Yeah, sure how bad. One thing, and you mentioned it earlier, that when you went to England, how they wanted you to sing like with this English tone and all that. But one thing I did notice, and I wanted to ask you about it, that when you sing, you don't pronounce TH. And I'm just wondering, is that a deliberate thing that you do for your singing style? Because it's very haunting when you do it, actually.
It's just when I'm singing, really, that I just don't.
Okay.
It's not something that I would think of when I'm singing, really. It's okay. Just like something that I do. Like in a lot of my words, I don't actually pronounce them anyway. Like if I'm saying to somebody, like, do you want some chicken thighs? They're like, what? Or like,
I knew exactly what you meant.
Yeah, exactly. Like I could never like sing anything like teeth in it or anything like that, because I just can't. Like it's just not in me to pronounce them. Like I did have elocution stuff when I was growing up, but it's just something that I suppose diction wise I've just never had. And at the start I did try and put it in, and I just felt like I was so overthinking it because I was so nervous that it was sounding wrong, that it was sounding worse because I was over pronouncing the THs.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what, I can't do that, because you have enough going on in your mind trying to write songs and then go out on stage and perform songs and like try and squeeze yourself into an outfit. So the last thing I want to be thinking about is my THs. So I was like, yeah, I could, you know what, whatever way it comes out, it just comes out.
Okay. No, I was curious because, you know what, I think it, there's something very haunting about it when you do that, you know, and even, you know, the pronunciation of those words. It doesn't, I know what words you're saying, but just as you, when you sing it and you sing it in that style and you sing it in that way, it just, it's very haunting. So continue not pronouncing your THs, young lady, is what I mean.
I will.
So when did your musical journey begin? I mean, I know everybody when they're little have dreams of what they want to be, but when did you realize that, all right, I want to do this singing thing?
I think it was really only after the very, very start when I put out Emerald on SoundCloud, when before my nan. It was then that I kind of really decided, you know what, I want to do this properly and I want to be a singer-songwriter. Because I've always been singing like everyone else. I've been singing all the time. Like, my sister's a great singer and whatever she does, I do, because I was like her shadow. So I'd have to sing and that would be that. We'd always be the performers in the family, all that kind of jizz and jazz and everything that goes with it. I think it's when I found out that I can actually write a song. After I wrote that song, I was like, I can actually write songs.
And had you tried to write songs before that? It had something that you dipped your toes into?
Not really, like, sat down and tried like I'd done that time. Like, I'd write jingles for my dad when he'd go away working. Okay. And I'd make him, like, tapes of me, like, singing into his dictaphone, like, things like that. But I'd never, like, sat down and be like, you know what, I want to write a song about blah, blah, blah. Maybe it was in that time that I felt like my nan maybe wasn't going to be around forever and I wanted to write a song for her, and maybe that's what spurred it on. I don't really know subconsciously what came to me to at that time and be like, I'm writing. But it just did. And I suppose the reaction for it, I was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I'm good at it. I wouldn't get called into these labels if I couldn't. So I'm going to go and I'm going to do it.
And when you wrote the song initially, I mean, what we just heard, I mean, it's a massive production, right? It's got so much going on and it's fantastic. And is that how you envisaged the song would be from day one?
Yeah, I always wanted it to have like the kind of more intimate verses that were like kind of almost trying to paint a picture to people of what my nan looked like and what we kind of would do together. And then I always wanted the choruses to be this massive, like, I love Riverdance. I love the drums in Riverdance. They were always an influence for me. And I wanted like it to be a big tribal feeling chorus where, like, as I said, you're like singing out your skin and you can almost feel the power through the vocals, through the music, through the counter melody that comes with it. It's like this tribe of girls behind the singing, like, you know, we'll run with the wolves, we'll do this, we'll do that. Like, and then I always wanted to bring it back down again into another verse and then bring it up. And then I didn't want to end it normally, so I kind of like added in the counter melodies and chucked a few different, like, you know, backing vocal bits that you never hear in the song, just to keep people engaged in it. I felt like otherwise, you know, you could kind of lose attention. So I wanted it to kind of be like that, because life is all ups and downs, and I feel like that song is very much up and down, like, even level wise, instrumentation wise, everything. And that's kind of like always how I saw it being done.
Okay, cool. Now, the second song that you have chosen to talk about is Falling. Why did you pick this one?
I love Falling. It's like, it's my dad's favorite song. It's so weird. Like, he's like, that's the one, baby. That's the one that gets my feet going. It's the one. And it's just this song, I suppose, for me, I was going to this point where, like, I basically had seen this guy, and like I say to everyone, like, I'm the type of person, like, one shift and I'm in, like, that's it. We're getting married.
You fall in love easy.
I do. I'm a massive lover. Like, I'm so bad. I'm like needy.com. Oh God. Every guy's like running away from me. So anyway, and then my friend ended up finding him on Tinder and I was devastated. Like, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening to me. Like, what in the name of God have I done wrong? And I went through a phase where I was like, okay, but what if I go like a bit blonder? Or what if I'm a bit funnier? Or what if I act like the cool girl that kind of doesn't really care? I'm like, yeah, cool. You do you, I do me. When deep down, I'm initially like raging. And I kind of was like going about that. And I was like, okay, what if I dress like this kind of thing?
Yeah.
And this was like a conversation I was just having like in my mind. And I kind of sat back and I was like, what the hell are you saying? Like, you're absolutely nuts. Like, you know, if you go changing for this guy, it's just not going to work anyway, because you're not going to be able to keep it up. Number one, you don't wear those type of clothes. Number two, your boobs aren't that big. Like, get over yourself. It's not going to happen. You can't bleach your head anymore. It's going to fall off. So I kind of was like, yeah, I'm right. So I wanted to write something about that, but it kind of in a bit of a sexy way. Like, I didn't want to be sitting at home and being like, a ballad, like being like, he didn't pick me, he picked somebody else. So I kind of had this image in my mind of like these two girls and like this one guy in the middle. And I was just like, was messing. And I was like, do you like me with boobs? Do you like them when they're flat? And this is like, I was just messing, going around them like, do you like me like this? And I was like, actually, it's a really good melody. So I was like, kind of just went with it. And then the chorus just came like, I'm falling, falling, falling. It's kind of like I was falling for him, but I was also like, I was falling. I was like losing my mind. I was like, why am I thinking that I need to be this person? You know, run to the beat of your heart. Like, you have to be true to yourself is kind of like the message that I was getting across. And then that's how I kind of end up writing Falling. I just took a bit of more of a lighthearted approach to it and wanted it to be a bit sexier and sassier. So
you said there's two girls and one guy in the middle. So are the two girls, is it you? Is it two sides of you?
So it's like the me and the me who I think he wanted.
Okay, okay.
So it's kind of like, that's what it's like. Do you like me like this? Do you like me like that?
Okay.
Do you want to hold her or do you want me back?
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like being the sassy, like there's a fire in your heart and oh, you like it like that.
How many dates did you go on him before you went into this little mini meltdown?
I think it was only about three. Great song. Thanks for the song.
Do you know what though? Yeah, yeah, you got a cool song out of it. So you'd be there on your dates now with a guy going, writing notes. What are you doing? I'm writing a song, pal.
Yeah, they'd be like, don't go on a date with her. She'll write about you. I'm like, oh, Nora.
Okay.
God help my recent dex. Oh, God, he's going down.
Yeah, that's what the whole next album is about. He didn't realize that just yet. You're going to start getting actors that look like him in for the music videos.
Oh, yeah.
I can see where this is going. Okay, well, we take a listen, so, to Falling.
Do you like me like that? Do you wanna hold hard? Do you want me back? There's a fire in my heart, I know you like it like that. And if you bury that ball, I will bury that purse. Tell me I'm bad, I'm the best that you got. You're driving me mad. You took your life short.
First two lines in the bridge. I taste your lips when you're kissing my mouth. You're in my head and I can't get you out.
Yeah, That's me. Because if he's going to be on Tinder, God knows who the bloody hell he's kissing as well. So I was like, well, he's probably kissing me and kissing somebody else too.
Yeah, Tinder could be the curse of a generation, eh?
It could be. It bloody well could be.
What always strikes me about you, and any time I've seen you perform, like you played at Cypress Avenue Sessions there before the Christmas, and that was out online. Your sense of dress, your style is amazing. Has this been something that all along you had a vision, and has this been part of the vision that you wanted to create?
Yeah, it definitely has. I love fashion, but like, I love fashion in the way that I love that I have the platform to be able to go out on stage or like to be able to go on TV and wear these amazing clothes. So I always try to like push it just a little bit more. Like I'd want to be like walking on stage in jeans and t-shirt. I can wear that going to Aldi's. Like I want to be dressed in feathers. I want to be dressed in organza. I just want to be dressed in PVC, anything, like anything unusual. And I've had mood boards of fashion for like ages, like so much. I collect it all the time. If I'm like somewhere and I see a magazine, I'll rip something out, take a photo of it, put it on my computer and put it into a mood board. Like I've so many of them just because I think it's a fun way to express yourself. And it's something that I really, really enjoy. And as I said, I'm lucky enough just to have the platform that I can do that alongside my music. So
it's like an extension of your music, though, isn't it? What you're wearing is very much like when I see you in these outfits. I mean, you have this tremendous, tremendous voice that just grabs you. But so do the outfits. So it's like an extension of you.
Yeah, it is. Like, you know, as a young one dressing up loads of my photos, like I look like I'm in fancy dress and the rest of my family are just there like a communion. It's like, oh yeah. And there's me like with hats and gloves and diamante clip-on earrings and diamante stuck on my forehead and everything. And I suppose just always being me that I just love. I just love it. I don't know what it is about. I just love the feeling of it. And
where'd you get the clothes? You know, these mad, not mad, but you know, these outrageous outfits with huge shoulder pads and all that. Where do you get them? I mean, you can't get them in the local high street. Do you make them?
Well, no, I wish I could. That's one thing that I would love to be able to do. And it's probably something I should have done during lockdown. I'd love to learn how to sew because I've so many outfits that I would love to make, but I just can't bloody do it. But I was lucky enough to wear like Helen Cody gave me that amazing outfit for the Late Late Show with the big feather neck piece and the feathers at the end of it. And when I went into her studio, I saw the dress and I was like, jeepy Mac, that dress is bloody amazing. I was like, would you mind if I tried it on? Because it wasn't one that I was going to try on. I was like, would you mind if I just threw that on there? So she was like, yeah, grand. So she was bringing me in the dress and I was like, I won't bother wearing the slip underneath. So I bought my PVC boots and a corset. I'll just wear them. And could we get some gloves with like feathers on the top of them as well? And she was like, okay. Like, look at me as I'm like, this dress is not supposed to be see-through. So sometimes I'm just lucky enough that, you know, amazing designers like that kind of let me have my own little input into the outfit rather than saying that dress comes with a slip and you have to wear the slip because it just would have not been very me.
Yeah.
So, you know, she was one that I was lucky enough to wear. The New Year's Eve dress I found online, like literally, I think I bought it for like €80.
What?
So sewed in the waist of it and just got a pair of red boots and a red top underneath it. And
but you clearly have an eye for it.
Yeah. But I like the mood boards, like, you know, whatever day that say I want some downtime, if I'm writing something, I mentally have a block. I'll just go on and like look at all the new stuff going on, like fashion shows and stuff like that, and take screenshots and just build it up. And then when I have something, I'm like, okay, a jacket like that with something like this, with something like that, and just put them together.
Okay. What was it like being on The Late Late Show?
So scary. Oh, my living God. I literally was like,
because we all grew up watching it.
I know. My nan was one woman who always said to me, if you're ever on The Late Late Show, you know you've made it. And then there was me going on the bloody Late Late Show. I was like, oh my God, what if I mess up? Blah, blah, what if people hate me? But it was amazing. Like Ryan was the nicest man in the world. He came down to my dressing room and like sat with me for half an hour, just like trying to calm me down. So literally like sweating with nerves. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Especially going on for the first time ever, my arse was hanging out and I was like, did I make the right choice in wearing this dress? Oh, jeepy Mac. But the crew are fantastic up there. Like, they just make you feel like at home. you know, they couldn't be any more helpful. I'm not very good at like putting in my in-ears and stuff like that. Like, and one of the gents came down and like helped me, showed me how to do it. And they were just bloody lovely.
And I bet you, like all these experiences, it was over before you knew it.
Yeah. I was like, can I go back on now? When they said to me, you're also being interviewed, I was like, no, the shit's going to hit the fan. I can't speak on the Late Late. And they just kept saying, just don't curse. Just don't curse. And then my manager was like, just don't curse. And I was like, no, I'm going to curse. What do I do?
Yeah, because it's live TV.
I know. I was like, oh, Nora. I could barely get on the stool. Like, there's one point and I'm literally just like trying to hold myself up on the stool. I'm like, I'm slipping off the stool because the dress is so silky. I had tights on underneath my leotard. I was just like slipping down like, oh, not now. Not now.
And was that your first kind of TV appearance anywhere? Where you spoke?
Yeah, where I spoke, yeah. Normally they don't let me speak. that was the first time, yeah, I got to speak. And it was great because, you know, it was nice to get my first speaking TV experience to be at home and, like, to be with such an amazing host. Like, he really made me feel comfortable. And I wasn't supposed to get as long as I did, and they were just like, going, and I was like, oh Jesus. So it went down well, and you know, I got a really good response. I think it was nice for people to see my personality, because I feel like sometimes when I'm on stage dressed in those outfits singing those songs, where I'm literally like, my facial expressions when I sing are gas, like I look horrendous. And then for me not to be able to express my personality, my other side, I think people probably think, geez, she's snobby out that one, she's up her own arse. But I'm really not. And yeah, you only find that out, I suppose, once you kind of get to talk to me and stuff like that. So yeah. I was really happy that I got that experience.
Yeah, because I guess, take Lady Gaga, for example. I remember when she first hit the scene and she had all these outrageous, fantastically huge, larger than life costumes. But, you know, she was obviously, it's kind of like acting. She was playing a role. Mm. But you could never tell her personality. But now as the years have gone on, you obviously do, you know. Yeah. But it was kind of like that. Ooh, and I guess, I don't know, do you find people would be kind of standoffish with you?
Oh yeah, totally. Like, I'm not going to lie, if I saw a girl getting up on stage with a see-through feather dress, tie-high PVC boots, and like making the faces I would, I'd be like, who in the name of God does your one think she is? I'd be like, she needs to go on away with herself. I, like, you know, so it's nice then when people come to the gigs and like, I do talk in between my songs, because I just can't stand there and be like, the next song is falling. Like, it's just soul destroying. So you know, it is great for them to be able to get to know me, and I want to be that kind of artist where people, you know, feel like that they do. And like, I don't go to media training. Like, I'm not trying to be something that I'm not. I'm just want them to know that I'm just a normal girl, that I love to sing and perform and to write songs, and I'm just going to keep going as long as I can. So
yeah,
you know, obviously you get the social media kind of, you can get the keyboard warriors, but like, if you're a nice person, you can kind of just kill it with kindness. It's like,
yeah. How do you feel about keyboard warriors? I mean, obviously you get a bit of thick skin over time, but was there a time where you would have went, Jesus, this is harsh?
Yeah, I did. Like, you know, it took a few times for me to kind of go into a bit of a melter and be like, wow, if people are saying that about me, maybe this isn't for me. Like, maybe I'm not right. Maybe I don't sound good. Maybe I don't look good, blah, blah. And it took a few times for me to be like, actually, these people don't know me. And this is very much at the start when, like I said, I didn't talk out. I didn't really do much. I just sang. And I was like, these people don't know me. They're just seeing this one side of me that is very much the performance side of me, I said. And I can leave them have that and leave it off. And I kind of made a rule with myself now, and I don't read any comments, and like, I don't go down over things. Like, when the Late Late put up about like, oh, well done, Lyra, amazing performance, like, and you see like 150 replies, I won't go down. I just won't, because, and I feel really bad, because, you know, out of probably like 100 comments, there's probably only about 10 people who have decided to take time out of their day to come on and be mean. And then the people who really are supportive and are really positive about things, you know, are the people that you do this for. Kind of like, you don't even get to see that, because I was so scared about seeing something else that would really hurt me because I'm such an emotional person. As you can tell from the clinging on to the boys, that I just can't, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Now, the third song that you picked to speak about this week on the podcast is The Very Beautiful Mother. I'm not going to ask you what the song is about because I think the title is self-explanatory, but why did you pick this one?
He dresses as a woman. So this one is about my mom, and it's kind of about, obviously I have quite a brash voice, some may say. It's quite a unique voice. It's you like it or you don't kind of thing.
Your singing voice, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Probably my speaking voice too, I'm sure.
That's amazing too, girl. That's amazing too.
So, and I kind of was getting really insecure about it because it was so, like, it is quite loud. And I was getting feedback from people, like negative feedback at the start, being like, oh, she sounds like she's singing in a football stadium, or like, that one really sticks in my mind. Like, that's the one that really got me. And,
I think any football team would be delighted to have you chanting at their games, by the way.
Thank you. So my mom was kind of like, sat me down one day and she was like, look, this is how you sing and this is your voice and you can't have any other voice. So you need to take what you have and what you were given in life as your gift and you need to make it like the best you can. You need to enjoy it. You need to rise above all this crap that people are saying. And you just need to bring it. And you can only do this yourself if you're true to yourself. So I went back over to England and I was in the studio and I just felt so like I had kind of like come out of this cloud and I finally knew that I could be me because my mom's after giving me that confidence. And I was like, said to Phil, the producer, I was like, I have this song that I've written about my mom and I want to record it. And I just started singing to him. I was like, my mother says. And you can tell it has kind of like an Irish lamented at the start, which I just really wanted to have in there because she's like my Irish mammy and we all know Irish mammies are the best. And that's kind of like what it was about, is just like taking those bad things and making it the best.
Yeah, because even the opening line, my mother said, don't listen to them, child. You just raise your head and darling, you'll be all right. Good advice. Because I think you've listened to her.
Yeah, I have.
And what do your mum and dad think of how things are going for you now?
They're delighted. Like, I think the late was a big turning point for them. Like, obviously, they've been supportive of me through the whole thing. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Like, my dad, God bless him, when I done Wilds, my first EP, I done it myself on my own back. And, like, my dad paid for it for me. Like, I was trying to do promotion works in Tesco's and, like, trying to do any bit of work that came my way to get money to, you know, get this EP done. And I was kind of doing it a bit cheaper than I should have been. And my dad was like, I'm going to help you with the money. You need to concentrate on your EP. Stop selling baby food in Tesco's and go and do this. So, you know, they've always supported me. But I think really seeing me on the Late Late Show, they were like, yes, baby, you're like, it's your time.
Yeah. And you know what the shame is, right? Because being Irish and being from Cork, we both know that if there had been no COVID, there would have been a massive party in the parents' house and everybody would have been around and piled around the TV. Shh, there she is. She's on now. Shh. You know, that would have happened.
My mum would have been thrilled. She would invite every single neighbour, even if she talked or not. They'd all be round.
She'd have been baking for a week.
She'd be going bloody nuts. Yeah. She'd probably have posters up around the place.
She'd have got you making sandwiches too the day before you headed up to Dublin for that show.
Yeah. Oh, she's a gas woman, that one.
So the woman that we're speaking of, shall we hear the song about her?
Yeah.
This is Mother, and this is the third song that Lyra has chosen on this week's podcast.
My mother said, raise your head, and darling, you will be alright. Follow your heart to the stars, you will find your path. Out of the dark, I can hear them calling your name. That voice says love, they're shouting, can you hear them now?
strong enough to build my whole kingdom. I am the one that you've been dreaming of. Now look what I've become. I'm rising.
I love that little keyboard thing you got going on right through it, and it just finishes off at the end.
It's so hard to keep in time with that live.
Yeah.
Like,
would you have a click track going in your ear monitor then?
Sometimes. I remember I had to do it once live on TV or something, and the click just wouldn't come through everyone's piece. So they're like, we're just going to have to do it without click. And I was like, oh my living God, I'm going to go all over the place. Just like, ding, 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 ding. It just sways of it. But yeah, it's a great little piece.
And you play instruments as well, Lyra?
I do a small bit, like not to a point where I get up on stage and start banging out on the keyboard. They would definitely be goners. But like when I'm at home writing, I do tinkle away at the keys, and that's kind of like how I...
Like, do you have an idea, I guess? You write the song. You obviously are going to come up with the melody. But do you know what instrument will work where?
Yeah, like I would have a fair idea of what I want where. Like, okay. You know, a lot of times I'd... maybe send a voice note to the producer and be like, I'm sending a demo. It'd be as rough as arses. And I think the strings should come in and they should be like, da, da, da. Like I'll
okay.
sing.
You'll hum it, yeah.
So I like being heavily involved in every aspect of my music, as you can probably tell. People are like, when I go into mixing with Darren, he's like, oh my God, here she comes. For PowerPoint, I'm like, Darren, I'm so sorry. And this is just the mixing of it. Like everything's been done. And he's like... takes us 3 days to mix her track, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but just can't let go.
And in a previous conversation that we had around Christmas time, are Lady Gaga's people involved with you in this record, the new one that you're recording?
Yeah, I was lucky enough before lockdown to be invited over to LA to work with them. So
wow.
I went in, it was kind of like a see how we get on, like, you know, just as much like, is their production style going to suit my style? As my voice something that they want to work with? And we all just got on really well together, and they just said that they would love to be involved in the album and produce some of the songs. So me, Remy, Blood Pop and Burns wrote a song together, which we're going to include. And then there's other tracks that they're going to come on board and produce.
For a girl who was born in Bandon and lived in Rochestown, you self-funded your first EP by selling baby food in Tesco.
Yeah,
a moment like that must be a pinch yourself moment, is it?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like when I got the Uber to the studio, I didn't realize that it was like Max Martin's studio. So I was like, where am I? I felt like I was in like some palace. I was like secretly like there taking photos. Like everyone's probably like, why is that weirdo taking photos? Because they're obviously work there every day.
Yeah.
It was weird, and I still find like when people say it to me, I'm like, is it really happening? Like, is that really a thing? But it is, and I'm just lucky to have the experience. Like,
and how is the new album coming along?
Slowly. It's so slow doing it over Zoom. It's just, and obviously with like trying to do the track with the guys in America, you have the whole time difference, and like I'm waking up to like 4 bounces, and then by the time I get the notes back to them, it's like the next day, and there's just a lot of going back and forth. And I had some Zooms with other producers this week, and you know, we were scheduled to go in and already have started recording, but I can't go into the studio, so I can't even go up to Manchester where he's based to try and start.
So you're going to have to wait until restrictions ease and you're allowed to, won't you?
Yeah. If it bloody comes to it, I'd be like, just release the demos. Release them.
An album recorded on voice notes. Wouldn't that be a cool kind of...
Oh, God. People be like, okay, I'm not a fan anymore. I'm like, sorry, guys.
A question I always ask my guests on the podcast every week. What's your preference, studio or live?
Live.
Why?
I loved interaction with the crowd. I love seeing people's faces when, like, I'm as nosy as hell. Like, I don't know if it's an Irish thing or not, but, like, I'll be behind stage waiting to go on. like peeking around to see like, oh, is there many people there? Oh, who's there? And just seeing the people there who know you're playing, they've come early, they're up the front, they're so excited. It is the most amazing feeling ever. Even before you stand on stage, knowing that these people have come to see you and enjoy your music. And I don't know, I just live for it. I'm that type of person that, like, if I have loads of money, I love to buy gifts for other people rather than to myself.
Yeah.
And I feel like with live, that's what you get. Like, what you get back from the audience by giving them your soul on stage is just something that you will never
experience. Best feeling in the world, isn't it?
Ever, ever, ever.
Mm.
I love it.
What's your favourite gig that you've ever played?
I think it would have to be Electric Picnic.
Okay.
I just really enjoyed myself on stage, and like it was the first time that like I walked out on stage and the tent was packed, and like I'm all one, like my sister kills me. She's like, you're so full of self-doubt, and like I am, and like I was worried that there wouldn't be people there, and like it was a massive tent, and I didn't know if people even knew who I was. And then when I walked out and it was packed and it was just getting busier and busier, I was just enjoying myself so much. I actually just kind of like switched off. I even on the crab across the stage, I was like, I was just having like this outer body experience, because like I can't really dance. I like to move on stage, like, you know, because the music makes me move, but I can't dance. So I was like, you know what, lads, I can't dance, so let's all crap dance together. Let's just do it. And everyone was just like, way! And it was just like singing for friends. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Awesome. Okay, so the final song that you've picked to chat about on this episode of Foreplay is Broken Down. Why did you choose this one, Lyra?
This one for me, I chose because it was at the start when I was getting called into the labels, and there was a lot of trying to fix me and trying to change me, and I felt very lost. I felt kind of like, as an artist, who am I? What am I supposed to sound like? What am I supposed to look like? What's happening? Because they'd put so much doubt in my mind. Although what I always envisioned in myself is what I am now.
Okay.
They were like, you need to dye your hair black. You need to be really pale. You need to pronounce your THs. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I was just like, I felt really lost. And I was on my own. As I said, I didn't have any manager. I didn't have anyone with me. And they're all older people telling me what I should do. Mm. Their record label, you kind of listen to them. So I was just a bit lost. And I decided that time then that I was in no state to sign a record deal. If I got that lost that fast, I was like, hang on here. You sign something and you're getting pushed into this box. I just wouldn't last very long because I'd be so unhappy.
Mm.
So I took myself away from it. I was going home anyway to look after my nan. So then when I came back, I just decided to write this song. And it's kind of more about like, you know, I needed guidance. I needed help. I needed reassurance in myself. And that's kind of like how I became writing the verses. And then in the chorus, so I was like, but you know what? Nobody's going to tear me down. Like I know what I am. I'm a powerful woman. I know where I need to be. And I just, being told that I never would make it in the music industry, and now being where I am, It kind of just really rings deep in me. And the guy who I wrote it about, it that I had a meeting with that was just horrendous to me, came to one of my first gigs and I sang it. And I literally sang it with such anger, literally just staring at him. I was like, I hope to God you know that this song is about you. That's what it was about. It was that time in my life where I was lost.
And I love that your opening line is Saint Anthony, because anybody who's Irish knows if you've lost something and you want to find it, it's Saint Anthony that you pray for.
Yeah.
Now usually it's an object, but it was more than that with you.
Yeah, it was me. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I should be. I didn't know if by not changing was going to not, you know, was I not going to have a music career if I wouldn't change and do what they say? I was just a girl from Ireland. They were a major record label in London. So I just felt, I was all over the place. God answered you.
But St. Anthony listened to you, because look at you now.
Yeah, Look at me now, lads.
Well, we have a listen to the final song, so. This is the very brilliant Broken Down, the fourth and final song that Lyra has chosen for this week's podcast.
St. Anthony, pray for me. They've turned me to an animal. Wash my skin clean. Please don't feed me to the wolves, to the Father and the Son. Holy Spirit, guide me now. Guide me now. You can. It gives me up at night, and I can hear a beat light. It runs through my veins. Fell down a rabbit hole and left there on my knees to fight the Queen of Hearts. Please, Mary, come from deep light. It runs through your veins.
Actually, I love in the bridge where you say broken, bring me down. It sounds like you're very, very defeated. It's just this real. But as you then say, you can't bring me down. It's like anger, annoyance, this. Hang on a second. You're not going to do this to me. And by the time then you go into that last chorus, it's like the biggest middle finger, in a sense, that you're giving them.
You should see it live. It's literally like, I literally go right back to that memory, and I am literally nearly farting fire on stage by the time I'm singing that last bit. I just get so angry when I sing that song now, and I'm just like, you can't bring me down. I'm just like, oh, I wish you knew how much you hurt when you were talking to me that way. And I'm just so happy I stuck to my guns and I stuck it out and I'm here how I want to be.
Yeah. So. Yeah, on your terms. You're doing it on your terms.
Exactly. Wouldn't mind having the black hair now that he said, because I wouldn't have these bloody roots.
Yeah, yeah, the old lockdown issues, eh? We're all the same.
Lockdown locks.
Lockdown locks. Because I know with a lot of artists, you know, you write your song, you put it out there and that's it. You don't on a daily basis listen to your own songs unless you're in the recording process. What's it like now when we've played the song and you're listening to them, some of them that you've written a number of years ago, what's it like to hear them?
It's really weird, actually, because I haven't listened to Broken Down in bloody ages. Like, I just, as you said, I just don't sit down listening to myself. I'm listening to my new music, seeing how I can make it better or whatever. So it's so nice to hear them, like, because it's just where I started. Like, that was my route of where I'm after growing to now. Like, that's my very first EP that I done myself. I feel very proud when I listen to them because, you know, they came from the heart. I feel like they were very much where I was at that point in my life. They tell a story that was my life. And it kind of makes me think I've come so far from that time, because my new music is like, it's still me, but it's progressed so much just like I have. Like, it has evolved. It has matured. Like, it has done everything that I've done as an artist. It's become bigger. It's become better. It's become more polished. It's become that other extension of me that I really wanted to get to. And at that time, paying for my own EP and not having many contacts, I couldn't do. So, you know, hearing those babies makes me very proud that they got me to this place.
Now, the place that you're at, when you were making those babies and you had a vision of where you wanted to go, are you nearly there? Are you on the journey there? Are you closer to there? But are you happy with where you're going?
Yeah, I'm very happy with where I'm going. I feel like musically I've grown a lot. Like, as I was saying, a lot of these songs, except for Falling, really, and maybe Mother a bit, but like, you know, Emerald and Broken Down and like Rabbit in the Headlights and stuff like that that's on the EP, like, they were very much me writing, singing into my phone. I didn't even have an iPad at the time. You know, I was going into a friend's garage. I was trying to do like everything myself. I was really trying to like pick out drum sounds, like make drum sounds in the room with like bins and stuff like that. And you know, I feel like now that I've got to meet people like the Blood Pop and Burns and, you know, all those, that being able to dip into their catalogue of sounds has opened my eyes to what I really, really love. Different sounds, you know, better drum samples, stuff like that, and has helped me evolve my music. That I am very happy with. Like, I don't think I'd ever put out a song that I was like, it's not really me, because I, at the end of the day, am the one that has to get up on stage and sing it, and I have to be able to enjoy it, and I have to be proud of it.
Irish Women in Harmony, you were also part of that, and a number of episodes ago I actually had Ruth Ann on it.
Yeah, and she's a powerhouse.
She's inspirational, is all I'm going to say. Her story is amazing. And you know what? You're inspirational too. Do you know, just listening to you, it's fantastic. But as I said to her, the thing about Irish Women in Harmony that I liked, I think it's one of the best projects to ever come out of this country, because I think there's nothing better to the ear than a multitude of female voices that can, number one, sing, but that can sing in harmony. What was that like being involved in that?
It was so amazing. Like, when I got the message from Ruth Ann, I was just delighted that, you know, my name was put down to be a part of it. Because it's so nice to be in a gang of girls. Like, it's so lovely. Because I know, like, a lot of people think that girls are, like, bitchy and that, like, they're like, oh, who's your one now and oh this and oh that. And that. Like, we're really not. Like, we all have come together, like, you know, we have a WhatsApp group. We all chat to each other. We're all like, well done on your release. Oh, my God, your song's come out Friday. This is great. Like, you know, we stay in contact as much as we can. We support each other. And that's really nice to know, being a solo female artist, that I have the backing of other female artists, that I'm not out there on my own. And I feel like a lot of the girls feel like that as well. It's just because it's hard enough industry as it is.
And it was too male dominated for too long, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh my God.
But WhatsApp groups, right? Like I have a couple of WhatsApp groups with friends in them, right? And we send funny memes and all that kind of stuff. Do you guys kind of get up to Divilman like that in the Irish Women in Harmonies WhatsApp group? Or is it just like, well done in the...
We bloody do. It's a group of women chin wagging and sending pictures and memes. Of course it is. Huh?
I can imagine. Brilliant. 2021. Let's assume that there's going to be a chink of light in this cluster mess that we've been living in. What's your plan? Once you know it's good to go, what's your plans? What do you hope to achieve?
Well, I hope to God to get this album out. I think the first thing that I'll be doing is going to the studio. I just have to get this music out. I've had it for too long now. It's been sitting there. When I done the shows just before lockdown, like I actually trialed out two of the new songs. And I'm inundated with messages still to this day, like a year later, being like, I can't get that bloody song out of my head. Where is it? Where can I find it? So I just need to get them out. That's my first point of call, is to get back into the studio and just, they're all done, as I said. They just need to be re-recorded. So that, and then I'm going on the road and I'm never coming back. I'm never going inside again.
Yeah, that'll be fun, won't it? Gigging. I mean, yeah. I think for any artist in the world, to not be able to play a gig, the one thing that people love to do.
Yeah. Even for me just to go to a gig.
Like, yeah.
Obviously, I love singing and I love getting up on stage, but like, I bloody love going to gigs as well. Having a good old piss off on a dance. Why not?
Do you know what? There's going to be an awful lot of crap artists out there are going to have jam-packed gigs because people are just etching for a gig. They're going to be kind of going, Jesus, I'm actually quite good. No, you're not.
We've nothing to do. Yeah.
I'd say venues and gigs will not see crowds like they're going to see when we can get back to going to them.
Like, I've already got booked for like festivals abroad for the first time ever. Like, I've only sang in Ireland and the UK. And like, to get booked, I'm just like, please go ahead, please go ahead. Because I would love to be able to go.
Would you like to play Glastonbury?
I'd love to play Glastonbury.
Yeah, it's something about it, isn't it?
I wanted to get your name, even if it's in the tiny, tiny font down the bottom.
Yeah.
A name on there would be great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now, I always say this, and it is always true, actually, because before I do a podcast, I always immerse myself in the world of the person that I'm going to have on. Now, obviously, I've listened to you lots prior to this, but before we met here to have this chat, I immersed myself in your songs and in the lyrics. And what's lovely is after this chat, I now will go back and I listen to your music now with different ears, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I will too.
That's good. And I also think, your Nana's looking down on you and she's guiding you in some way.
I massively believe that. So thank you for saying that.
100%. And you know what? She's proud of you. And I think everybody in Cork is proud of you because, you know, we're Cork people and we're very proud of our own. It's the People's Republic down here. So, you know, to think that one of us is out there and about to dominate. And I think you will, you know, I think you've got a great future ahead of you. I think whatever the dream was that you envisaged was going to happen is going to happen.
Thank you so much. That's so nice to hear.
So enjoy it.
We're getting emotional in a minute.
So enjoy it. And it's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for being part of this.
Thank you for inviting me. I've really, really enjoyed it. It's lovely to take some time out of the doom and gloom around us and talk music and have a really nice chat with a really nice person. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 4Play. If you're an artist or a band and you're interested in getting in touch, then you can do so in many different ways. You can email me at podcast4play@gmail.com. On Twitter, at Podcast4Play, on Facebook, at 4Play Music Podcast, and on Instagram, at 4Play Music Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again, and we'll chat soon.